Good evening, everyone. This is the Healing Our Brokenness podcast, where we dissect problems and solutions that exist among broken people living in a broken world. And at Healing Our Brokenness podcast, we believe that everyone has a story. And when we are walking through our stories, it leads us to the path of walking through our healing. Today is Monday, January the 11th, 2021, and it's still hard for me to think of that 2021. Whether I'm writing a date on a check or taking care of business, I still want to keep putting the 2020 down. I'm not sure where the time has gone today. I tell you, I cannot believe that it is 6-something in the evening, and I still have quite a few things that I want to get done for today. Thank God I had margin in my schedule because I had one meeting after the next, and then I also had a few interruptions and calls along the way trying to take care of business. And so I said, I need to go ahead and get this podcast out here for you guys. Yesterday, I got a chance to interview Victoria Coberly, who is a woman of God. She's a traveler, a writer, a teacher, a blogger, and a tutor. And I want you guys to listen in and just be blessed with part one of an interview with Victoria Coberly.
There was a sun. He was devoured by earth. There was a God calling the Father. There was a
guest here. Her name is Victoria Coberly, and Victoria is a woman of God. She's a traveler, writer, teacher, blogger, and tutor. Welcome, Victoria.
Hi, Katina. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm so excited to be here.
Yes.
Thank you for having me.
And you are very, very welcome. I guess we'll just jump right in. The first question that I have for you today is, I want you to tell the listeners about some of the locations that you've traveled to.
Okay, well, as you know, I come from an Italian family, first generation. So I've been to Italy many times. I've traveled to Spain, France, England, Switzerland, and Germany in Europe.
Okay.
I've been to in Canada. I've been to British Columbia, Toronto, and Quebec.
Okay.
And Mexico, Puerto Vallarta, Cancun, and Playa del Carmen.
Wow, that is quite a few places.
Go to Western Caribbean with some friends. And my mom was blessed to come with us also. It was shortly after my father passed away.
Okay.
It was a really nice trip of relaxation and connection and being with one another. Actually, the highlight of our trip was, especially for me, was a boat excursion to a sandbar in the Grand Cayman, where you can swim with stingrays.
Wow.
So you go out with guides, you get off the boat. And
right.
yeah, the stingrays actually come up to you and come up to your legs and, you know, brush against you. And so, but the best part for us, I think, was a back rub from the stingray.
A back rub?
Getting a back rub, yes. The guide really? Actually picks up the stingray and then massages your back with the stingray.
Oh, my word. Wow. Yes. That sounds amazing, you know, and me thinking myself of getting out in the water with stingrays, it sounds like it's exciting and adventurous. And then at the same time, I can see myself being really nervous, like surrounded by them. So were there lots around you guys?
There were quite a few. I would say there were more people than stingrays.
Okay.
Oh, but, wow. And the guides were very calm and very reassuring.
Oh, they were.
So, okay. Yes. Yeah. They knew what they were doing. So.
That's a plus, right?
Yes, definitely. Unfortunately, my mom didn't get a chance to get off the boat. She tried and our friends tried to help her, but in the end, she just got too scared and decided against it. And so she just watched, but she was too worried about not being able to get back on the boat.
Okay, if she got
and
off.
That wouldn't have been good.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right. So fear prevented her from getting off the boat.
Right.
To experience the right. I have that experience.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. And do you mind telling the audience about some of your childhood memories growing up in Italy?
Yeah, well, I actually didn't grow up there, but I traveled extensively.
Okay.
So I take that back. I did live there for a year, but I was only a year old. So to 2 years old. So I don't have any memories of that. Just, you know, my memories are from looking at pictures. But it was actually a time where my parents moved back there.
Okay.
They were going to stay there indefinitely, but then decided against it and they moved back to San Francisco.
Okay. Wow. So what are the things you remember doing in Italy as a child? Do you have any of those memories?
Yes, definitely. Well, one memory that really is etched in my mind is I had the opportunity to have my Holy Communion in Italy with my extended family.
Okay. Wow.
So, yes. At the time I was taking catechism classes in San Francisco and I missed the ceremony with my classmates because I was going to have it in Italy.
Ah, okay.
Yes. Yeah. So they had theirs before and then I had mine the following summer.
Okay.
And but so I had to wait about 9 months.
Before you got
mine, yes.
They had already experienced.
It was difficult for me. I didn't quite understand how special it was going to be. And I mean, I knew that my whole family was going to be there, but I was just so convinced that having it with my classmates was going to be so much better.
Okay, so now that I know it's been some years, but looking back, do you feel like the one in Italy was better? Or do you, you know, and then also, can you describe like some of the feelings? Do you remember some of the feelings you had by missing out on the ones with the classroom? Do you remember? Can you just?
Yes, I was sad. I was disappointed. I probably told my mom I wanted to have both. I don't remember saying that, but I could see myself saying that.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
And she kept reassuring me, be patient, not that much longer. You'll see how great it will be. And mom is always right, right, Katina?
Yes. That's right. That's true.
Yes, so she was. And which brings me to a scripture along the lines of what we're talking about, Proverbs 69, a man's mind plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps and makes them sure.
Amen.
Yeah, amen. Yes. So I had it planned in my mind that I was going to have it in San Francisco, but the Lord directed it elsewhere.
Yep. God had other plans, didn't
he? Yes.
He sure did. What are some of your favorite things to do when you visit Italy?
Well, one of them is eating.
Okay. And what kind of foods do you like to eat there?
basically everything. So and I, you may have heard of focaccia, the Italian flatbread.
Yes.
So it is very well known. They have the best focaccia in Liguria on the Italian Riviera. That's where my mom's family's from.
Okay.
So, yeah, I just love eating that, of course. Not the best for your waistline, right? But I tell myself, on vacation, calories don't count. So actually, we do a lot of walking when we go there.
Okay.
And swimming and just a lot of exercise.
A lot of exercise. Okay. Wow. A lot of walking and swimming. That sounds like fun. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like activities where you really get a chance to connect through, you know, whether it's via conversation and kind of like maybe a more slowed down pace, would you say, than from here in the United States? Do you think that the pace is more slowed down?
In some ways it is. There, in this town, Chiavari, which is about 25 miles east of the big city, Genoa.
Right.
That's where my cousins live.
Yeah.
My mom's side. And, pretty much everything's walking distance. So you go out and meet your friends at the cafe, you know, in the piazza, which is the squares there.
Okay.
And, in fact, driving there is a nightmare. There's very, very limited parking.
Okay. So now, do you remember seeing, I know when my son went to Italy for, the Giffoni Children's International Film Festival, he talked about seeing a lot of mopeds. Do you remember seeing
those? Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay.
It is moped filled.
Really?
Definitely, yes.
Okay, so either
especially in the summer, it attracts many tourists. And there's just a lot of people. And you may have heard of Ferragosto in Italy, which
I have not.
In August, people take their vacations. So people from the big cities come down to the beach resorts.
Okay.
And so it's extra crowded during that month.
Okay. Wow.
The big cities can be deserted and then the beach towns are packed.
So my words. I'm picturing it. I remember my son telling me about going to the beach there and him telling me about like the difference in the temp. It'll feel fine. And then he said, then all of a sudden, like the sun will beat down on you and you feel like you're about dying. And then when the sun shifts, you'll feel like it's cooler again. You know, he was trying to describe how it was, you know, and that was about 9 years ago when he went. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Years ago when he went to Italy. Yeah. So, wow.
Yeah, I would love to hear about his experience there sometime.
Oh, for sure. Yes. Yeah. He went, like I said, for a film festival. And he stayed with a host family and was able to connect with like the host family. I want to say they had two children because the one girl who was at a festival with him, she teamed up with a different age group. She was 16 at the time and he was 13. So, but it was a nice experience because he got a chance to try out the different foods there in Italy. And he was just amazed how they had like open meat in the market and everything. And he said he thinks he has a feeling that he might have eaten some part of a horse. And I said, really? He said, yeah, because I didn't think about it until later. He said, I was thinking, what was in that sandwich? And I was like, oh, wow. He said, yeah, you know. But he said he didn't have to worry about getting sick or anything like that. And he talked a lot about trying out all different flavors of gelato. You know.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of his favorite things. Yeah, gelato.
That's also the best there, too, in Italy. The ice cream is so good. Gelato.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's better than having it over here, experiencing over to Italy, you think?
Yes, I believe it's creamier. It just tastes different. Yeah.
Okay, probably like the milk and everything, probably, right?
Probably, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Okay. Wow. Wow.
But, piggybacking on what you were just saying, years ago, my mom and I went to visit one of my mom's uncles in Milan, and he prepared some food for us. And there was some cured meat, and I had some. And then I later found out it was horse meat. And I was utterly disgusted.
Once you found out.
Yeah, I was young, probably about 7 or 8.
Okay. Now, how did it taste to you when you ate it at the time?
It was fine. I didn't, you know, gag or anything.
Okay.
Yeah, it seemed like it tasted fine. It's just the thought of that I ate that made me feel, ugh.
Yeah. I can only imagine. I remember when my cup when I was little, and I could have been anywhere from 8 to 10, and my grandmother called me and my cousin over and said, "Here, girls, you want some of this?" And then we said, "What is it?" And she said, "It's chicken." And then after we ate it, she told us that it had been rabbit. Oh. And we were like, "Oh, we're gonna die." That type of thing. So
my goodness. Yeah, of course they tell us after we eat it.
Right. She, I guess she knew that if
they
she
know better than
rabbit, we never would have tried it. You know, we never would have tried it. But to me, from what my taste buds remember, and I'm not going to try any, I won't be trying any anymore, but I thought it tasted, it pretty much tasted like it was chicken, you know? And I really didn't know until, like I said, once she told us afterwards, you know, but we were kind of leery because we were looking at it like something looks different. She said, "Oh, it's chicken, try it." But she knew, had she told us it was rabbit, we never would have put it in our mouths. Oh, my.
Yes.
So do you think, Victoria, do you think that there's a connection to traveling and faith? And then if so, what do you think that connection is?
Well, I do. I think that you need to pack a lot of faith when you travel.
Yes.
You do.
Yeah,
There's so many things, you know, variations, things that may not go your way. Italy has a lot of strikes, also known as hiccup strikes. So they're a very strike-prone country. And, you know, so you may have plans to go somewhere the next day, and then you wake up to find out the trains are on strike.
Really?
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
They're used to it there, but I think as a tourist, too, that can become, you know, very tiresome and difficult.
Wow.
But actually, we went to a small, my family had an opportunity to go there summer 2010. The five of us went, and that was great. And we went to a small town called Sori, which is near Chiavari, the town I have been talking about. And we met some cousins of mine from my dad's family. We had a lovely day. We took the train there.
Okay.
And then it was time to come home and take the train back, right?
Right.
So we think.
Right.
We get to the station, and I tell you, very, very small train station, and nobody's there working. So you know, get your tickets online and all that. And I look up at the screen, and I see that it's canceled.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So, and we were the only ones there waiting for the train.
Oh my word.
So, you know, I called my cousin's husband, and we were fortunate he came to pick us up. Otherwise, we would have spent the night there in a very expensive hotel if they had room, or perhaps just out on the beach.
Or out on the beach waiting for the next day.
Yeah.
And you guys were trying to take the train to head back to the airport?
No, to go back to Chiavari where my cousins live.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It was a pretty short train ride.
Wow. That is something, isn't it?
But I tell you, if I remember correctly, we got a round trip ticket.
Really? Oh, my goodness.
And they canceled it.
And that was a good thing, though, that you guys were able to get picked up.
Yes, right? It was.
What
were
you going to do, stay out there all night?
Yes, I know.
What would have
happened,
you know?
And so, some of these strikes can go on for a few days, too. Yeah.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. And I see what you're saying. Like you said, when you think about it with traveling, and then you think about your faith, there can be a lot of hiccups in life along the way.
Yes, know? Yes.
Going on
and then, a lot of hiccups, yes.
A lot of them. Mm-hmm. We have everything planned out from start to finish.
Yes, we do. Or I know I do. Especially when I travel.
Mm-hmm.
But I really would like to learn to be more flexible when I travel and not so rigid in plans. And,
mm-hmm.
But when we go there, we have quite a few cousins and people to see. So we'll stay with somebody for a week and then go on to our next destination, have it all planned out. But, you know, the trains need to be working for that to go smoothly.
In order for it to go smoothly.
Yes.
I did not realize that they have a lot of strikes. And it makes you think about in life when we are planning different things and, you know, we're planning it from start to finish. It could be like, just for instance, if pending this was not a pandemic, if I wanted to go to the city and planned on meeting up with my mom to go to the museum, anything from my house all the way to the city, anything is possible as far as something happening with me, maybe possibly missing my metro train, you know, trying to even get downtown, or me getting downtown and my mom running late and her not leaving out the door on time, which will put maybe our lunch plans later or dinner plans, or maybe I was supposed to come back out here and meet someone. So,
right.
You know what I'm saying? So when you travel and when you go through things in life, it's almost like in a sense you have to leave room / margin for when things don't go our way.
Yes. That's a good way of putting it, Katina.
You know,
that is true. Yes. Yeah.
Leaving that margin and that space open, just in case, you know, things don't work out and we all have things we want, we have a plan, and, you know, and kind of going behind it and saying, Lord, this is what my desires are. And then at the same time, even though these are my desires, Lord, let, you know, your will be done in this situation,
you know,
and realizing that, you know, you're making plans, but we should have a disclaimer. Look, once you become a Christian, your plans are subject to change at any notice. You know how you watch the commercials and they talk about the different medicines and they have the fine print at the bottom. And that's how it should be, you know, when we become a Christian, you have a disclaimer on you where plans are subject to change at any notice, you know?
Yes. Yes.
God doesn't have to ask us for permission for in order for him to
change plan, right?
Allow something to happen to change our plans for life. So it's really something when I think about that connection. And then what I was thinking about too, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The parenting stage, I just wanted to make a comment piggybacking off of when you said about the train. I know with my son, when he got ready to come back, because there were, I want to say, there were four of them, four teenagers, and there was a parent chaperone. Mm-hmm. When they got on their way back, he said what happened every night after the film festival was over, they held this big party for the teenagers, you know, for all the kids. It was this big party. It was in, like, he was explaining to me, like, this gated area, you know? And I said, sound like you guys had a wild time. He said, we had a lot of fun. They had the music going loud and having dancing, having a good time. And he said, on the very last night, all of that happened. Then they had to quickly get their, you know, belongings from where they lived at the host family. And then they had to take a bus that involved a 4 to 5 hour ride. And this bus ride was overnight.
So,
the party was over at almost 12 at night. They had to get their things and hop on a bus and ride overnight 4 to 5 hours to get to the airport so that they could take their train in the morning. And he said, only to find out after being at the airport for several hours that they had overbooked the flight. So they were not going to be able to get on the plane to come back.
Oh, my goodness.
So I tried to reach him. He told me what the problem was, what was going on. And then I continued trying to reach him, but I was not able to, because sometimes the connection was kind of goofy with me trying to reach him on his cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, I was finally able to get in contact with him, but I was all nervous. And I'm thinking, what am I nervous about? There's a parent chaperone on the trip. If he's not able to come back, you know, on that particular day, he was able to come back. It's okay. But, you know, as a parent, you panic the first time.
Yes, of course.
We talk about with the plans not going right. And
you're his mother and your son's thousands of miles away.
Exactly. Exactly. There you go. So I'm thinking, what's going on? Because I couldn't reach him. So finally, at some point he called me and he said, well, we were after driving all night, half, you know, 4 or 5 hours on this bus through the mountains to get back to the airport. They found out they were not, you know, and several hours later at the airport, they were overbooked. And so then the airlines were nice enough to put them in a hotel.
And nice.
Each of them had their own room. And I said, wait a minute. They gave you guys, teenagers, your own hotel room? They put these in their own room. I said, what in the world? So, yeah, you know, the chaperone, she had her room. And then each of the kids had their
room.
I said, what in the world?
What luxury.
Yes. He said the hotel was real nice. And I said, well, what happened all this time? I was trying to get in touch with you. And he said, I fell asleep. And I just slept for hours because they had been up the whole night.
Oh, my.
You see what I'm saying? Between the bus ride, them leaving at like midnight, and then getting to the airport and being there for several hours. So they just crashed, I guess, when they got to the hotel. And that's why I was not able to reach him. So he said that, yeah, he had he'd fallen asleep and he was out and didn't hear his phone. And by the time he saw that I had called and he got back in touch with me, by that time he said it was evening there. He woke up confused and thought it was morning, and he went downstairs to the hotel because they gave them some vouchers to get free food. And he asked about breakfast, and he said, the guy said, no, you mean dinner. And he said, breakfast. And he says, no, it's
poor
dinner.
Guy.
So he didn't even realize, you know, by them traveling overnight, his whole time was off.
Yes.
He said, due to the fact that they didn't get a chance to go to leave out on the flight that morning, that evening, once he woke up, he was able to do some souvenir shopping. So the whole trip, he hadn't done any souvenir shopping. Of that delay, and them being another hour, they went to some places outside. He said, you know, by that hotel, they walked around and was able to do some souvenir shopping.
So that worked out perfectly.
Worked out perfectly. He got me and my daughter a scarf, and he bought a painting, a nice painting, but it ended up working out perfectly for him. Yeah. So we'll switch gears and move over to parenting. So how would you describe your parenting style?
Well, I would describe it as very loving and nurturing and, you know, appropriate discipline.
Okay.
Also, and I guess that style of parenting, I did look it up, is called authoritative. It's not authoritarian, where you dictate mostly everything to your child, and very strict discipline. We didn't have that. So authoritarian. And just allowing them also to learn from their mistakes and to see the consequences, even though it's hard for a parent to watch that.
It is hard.
Yes, it is. But just really allowing and having them experience teachable moments also.
Okay. Wow. Mm-hmm. Now, why do you think you guys chose that style?
Probably just some reading that I've done before, some parenting classes that we took. It kind of, you know, guided us to go that route.
Okay.
And, you know, I really wanted to instill in my children to be kind to others, humble, help others. And to treat each other well. You know, I'm grateful right now that they're good friends. And we told them growing up, you know, that mom and dad aren't always going to be around. We're not going to be here forever.
Right. That is
and yeah, that it'd just be so nice if they can, you know. In each other's lives and get along. There was a time where they weren't getting along very well, which is natural for siblings.
Oh, it sure is.
And so one day I had had enough with it, and I sat them down and I gave them each a tube of toothpaste, small tube,
really?
A paper towel. And I said, so squeeze some toothpaste out. And they did it. They're looking at me like, okay, my mom's, I think she's gone crazy. So they did. And I said, now try putting the toothpaste back into the tube. they're looking at me again like, okay, this is not really possible. It's going to be messy. It's
right.
going to be hard. And I said, that's what happens when you talk to somebody and you're unkind and you're mean, you say unkind words and you don't treat others well. But, you know, specifically meaning them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then we talked about, you know, how better they could treat one another and, you know, use kinder words and, you know, learn to be patient.
Exactly.
And always, you know, get your way right away.
That is so true.
Learn to wait.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
It was a lesson for me too, Katina.
You know what?
And I should have had my own toothpaste tube.
I love that illustration because you think about it. When you squeeze out, you can't put what you squeeze out, you can't put
no.
it back. So once we say something, you know,
you can't take it back.
Mm-hmm.
You can apologize, which is,
right.
of course, what you need to do, but you can't take back the words.
Right. You can't take them back.
Yeah.
It's too late. And like the scripture says, there is life and death in the power of the tongue.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes, there is.
Yeah, even if we apologize, the words were put out there and each of us are wired up differently. Some of us will, you know, it'll go into the brain. We kind of dissect it and we can put it back out in a healthy way. Some of mm-hmm. us take that and dump it onto somebody else. And then
right.
some take it and internalize it. So, you know, once we
exactly.
take it out, so to speak, we can't put it back into the tube. I love that illustration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a very good one.
Yes. Yeah.
So if you
Thank
think
you.
About it, would you say what was some of the worst parenting advice you received and what was some of the best parenting advice?
You know, the worst parenting advice, I really had to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I could come up with was unsolicited advice on potty training.
Okay. The potty training.
Yeah. I guess I was in a struggle with it for a time. And, you know, I know people mean well, but they'll just give advice that wasn't really applicable to our situation. And I had to get out of the power struggle
yes.
and just, you know, the kids do it at their own time.
They should do.
I found out. And Yeah. They didn't go to kindergarten and pull up. So.
Right. And that is so true that
I know.
It's a power struggle, isn't it? It is.
It can be. I allowed it and then I had to really just backtrack, take some deep breaths and, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you're saying because it can
yeah.
be a power struggle. Because sometimes our tendency as parents, you want to think, well, like I'm the parent, I'm in charge and this is what you're going to do and I'm going to set this plan for you. And then depending once again on how the child is wired, they're like, well, I'm in charge. I'm in control of my own
yes.
body. And I'm
exactly.
not saying what happened, but this is what you're thinking. And I got another plan for my body.
Yeah.
So,
and they are in control of that.
Yes. So,
that
yeah,
is for sure.
It is very tricky when it comes to that particular area. So what would you say would be some of the best parenting advice you've received?
Really allow and let our kids to be people that God created them to be. And we just really made sure there wasn't any shaming or, you know, condescending or, or not making them feel bad for things that, you know, were out of their control or, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, you know, one of the best advice that I got.
Yeah. And that's some very good advice. Cause sometimes a lot of times as a parent, we could say, well, I should have done this. I should have done that. And there are some things that, we do need to take responsibility for the fact that we did or didn't do something. However, there are a lot of things in life that we did not even have control over the situation to begin with. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, exactly.
There's a lot of situations like that where we didn't even have control.
Mm-hmm.
And that no matter what the situation was going to possibly be the way it was going to be, you know, because we didn't have any control over it. And especially when our kids get to be teenagers, mm-hmm. to me, that's one of the hardest times because yes. you even have less control than you thought you had before over the situation. Because if you want them to do something, they may or may not do it.
And exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah,
that's true. Yes.
Not only
they have to start making their own choices,
they have to make their own choices,
mm-hmm. and also making their faith their own.
Yes. Too. It's no longer mom and dad's faith.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And another thing that we mm-hmm. really strive to do was, you know, and I had to really work on this throughout the years, is just really to listen to my kids and not talk so much.
Okay.
I mean, I remember my middle son, my middle child saying, Mom, you're not even listening to me.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
It was just like,
yeah.
Okay. I got hit in the head by 2x4. Like,
yes.
You know,
I know what
right,
you're
slow
saying.
Slow down. And then I'd say, okay, honey, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Try saying it again.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm a talker myself. And so, like you said, that can be a challenge where you just have to tell yourself, yeah. like, no, I'm not going to say anything because I need to be able to finish listening and yes. absorb what was being said instead of
exactly
formulating in my head what I'm going to say to what they're saying, you know, or what I want to say next, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And another thing we really tried not to do was compare them.
Yes.
Just, you know, let them express themselves, their own individuality. They all have strengths and weaknesses like we all do and
right.
concentrate on their strengths and they're different.
Mm-hmm.
All of my kids are pretty different.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And like you said, I think that's a wonderful piece of advice because we can tend to want to say, well, how come you're not like this or blah, blah, blah did this and
yeah.
blah, blah, did that. But that's not blah, blah, blah. God created each of us, you know, it could be
yes.
in a room that might like, 5 of the same things, but then we might have 20 other things that are totally different. You know, he wired each
yeah.
individual different.
And none of us like to be compared to anyone. So
no, we don't.
We were sensitive about that in our child rearing.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's really...
And then just praying, as you know, Katina, I mean, the power of prayer is so crucial and it's so powerful.
Oh, my word.
Just
yes.
praying for my kids, and I still pray for them, and they're adults.
Right.
Pray for guidance. Pray for, you know, job opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Pray for a special someone in their life.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So now, what would you say are some family traditions that you passed on? And that's if you passed on some from, like, mm-hmm. your parents that you passed on to your children.
Yeah, I did think of a few. On the holidays, specifically Christmas Day and Thanksgiving Day, we have antipasto, which is,
really?
You know, auntie means before. So before the meal, pasto's meal. We have prosciutto, which is kind of similar to Italian ham. Mortadella, similar to bologna.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, not similar to Italian ham. Similar to our ham is a prosciutto.
Prosciutto, okay.
And then, one of my sons isn't a big prosciutto mortadella fan, so we get salami for him. And
okay.
Yeah, and we have olives. We used to, growing up, we would have those little jarred artichokes.
Yes.
Marinated artichokes in oil, but nobody really likes them except me, so stop getting those.
Okay. So you're the
And then we also do chin-chin. So, and that kids remind me when I forget. So chin-chin is just cheering with your glasses.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah, it's called chin-chin. And they'll say, we can't eat yet. We have to do chin-chin, you know?
Oh,
so, yeah.
So all of
and
those.
Then my mom used to buy a panettone, which is a Italian fruit, similar to a fruitcake.
Really?
Yeah. It's the Italian fruitcake. It's called panettone. And specifically at Easter time, they had one called Colomba, which is also a panettone, but it's shaped like a dove.
Really?
And it's covered in powdered sugar and then topped with slivered almonds.
Really? That sounds so good.
But then again, my family didn't really like it.
Really? They did?
And my husband. And now that I can't eat gluten.
Right.
And so I don't do that anymore, Katina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But one tradition that we started in our own immediate family is on Christmas morning, my husband hides baby Jesus from our nativity set. And he hides them pretty well.
Really?
It's hard to find. Yeah. And so they all run down to the basement. My husband and I don't play.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the three kids, and now my son-in-law is involved. So, you know, and Tom will give like little clues. Oh, no, you're really cold. You know, you're not even close. Are you getting warmer? You know?
Okay.
Oh, you're really hot right now. You know?
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, my youngest son won this past Christmas, but the previous Christmases, my son-in-law had won. So whoever finds baby Jesus first gets to open the first Christmas present.
Oh, really? Okay.
And, you know, we've been doing that for years. They're adults now. They still love it.
You know what traditions are like?
Yeah.
That? Believe that. Yes.
I thought maybe they'd grow out of it, but they love it. Oh, Dad, you know, you gotta, don't forget to hide baby Jesus. Now they're reminding us to do things, right?
Right. That's something, you know, we hold on to from childhood. And I think about my own at Christmas time. That was one of my, favorite holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas. Oh my goodness, Christmas.
Right.
And my grandmother's when she used to live in the projects. It was magical, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very, very magical. And hanging out with the family and the music.
Yeah.
Lots of noise. It would be hot in there and having the windows cracked open a little bit to get some air. But it was a magical time. So I can see how they would be interested.
Yeah.
You know, that might have been, you know, that might be like a magical, you know, sense for them.
But yeah, I mean, it may be something that's carried on to the next generation. I mean, they may do it with their children. We'll see.
Especially since they still like to do it as an adult.
Right, yeah. You know what I mean? Then for a few years, we did the Advent with the candles and the, And I, you know, like the last few years, I really would like to start it again this year.
Mm-hmm.
The last few years we didn't do it. I mean, we're empty nesters now.
Okay. Yeah. I know about that.
And, but that's something that I'd like to, you know, do again.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Hmm. Wow. That sounds like fun times.
Yes.
Now, how has faith played a role in your parenting?
Well, I feel like it's played a very crucial and important role. You know, like I mentioned earlier, Tom and I have been praying for our kids since they were, you know, very young.
Right.
And it also played an important role in how I taught my children. And it's just really woven into our parenting.
Okay.
When they were preschoolers, we... they like this book called Tiny Talks. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Tiny Talks.
Yeah, they're 13 fictional characters who live in a tiny town.
Mm-hmm.
And it just talks about everyday happenings. And they each contain a moral truth about God's character.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I believe there's a Bible scripture at the end.
Okay.
You know, they talk about, you know, what happens when you lie, what happens when you steal, how not only it affects you, but how it hurts other people around you and how it hurts God.
Okay. Wow.
And another part of the book also encourages children, you know, to be kind and humble, thoughtful to others.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of teachable moments in them woven into the stories.
Wow. That sounds really sweet.
Yeah. And they really liked it. Now, my youngest one, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
There's 3.5 year difference.
Okay.
But between my second and third. So I mostly did it with my first two. And, in a way, I kind of wish I had done more of that with him, but, anyway.
Yeah.
You know how it goes.
I know. I do. Trust me, I do.
But you did get other things, so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, how would you say your parents played a role in your parenting?
You know, I really think they gave me the spirit of adventure and traveling and loving on people and interested in languages, learning languages, interested in different cultures.
Right.
And also grew up skiing. So I was very fortunate. We lived in San Francisco and we'd go up to Lake Tahoe, which is a good 4-hour drive.
Really?
And sometimes we would just go up for the day. We would leave really early and come back late at night.
Okay.
So my dad would do all the driving. So drive in the field day and then drive back. But there were times when we went for the whole weekend, which was nice.
That sounds nice.
So, that was the time when skiing wasn't nearly as expensive as it is now. Now it is absolutely outrageous. We didn't, my kids only skied a few times. My daughter took a few lessons when she was maybe 4 or 5, but we did bring them up to the snow when our kids were little, so they had that experience. Because, you know, San Francisco, we actually lived in Santa Rosa, Windsor, Sonoma County. It doesn't snow there. We had to be intentional about making trips up to the snow.
Right.
And we'd go with good friends sometimes, which was really nice. Rent a cabin or, you know, just on our own. And
right.
So the kids had fun, you know. It was novelty for them. It was exciting to build a snowman. It wasn't in our backyard like it is now.
Oh, for sure, right?
Right. It was an adventure.
That's what it sounds like. So with those activities that your parents did with you, those areas you just you passed those on to your kids?
Yes, yes. Okay. And I was so thankful that we went in 2010. My husband had traveled for a while with his job, so we had airline points, which was nice, airline miles. Okay. And then we had places to stay. We did go to a lake called Lake Garda, just the 5 of us for a weekend and just a little getaway. So that was nice. Just to reconnect as a family and be together.
Okay. So would you say that the role that your parents played in your parents, and now do you think that everything was positive, or do you think that some of it, that you had like a positive and a negative side, that you know, like a negative side that you might have brought over? Do you think?
Probably a little bit too much protectiveness, I think, because I was an only child, and so I had to be careful. I mean, even still now, you know, my kids are adults, you know.
The protective.
Are you doing this? Are you taking this vitamin?
Right.
You know, vitamin D is really good right now. I'm going to prevent viruses, you know.
I know. I'm myself sometimes, making sure I say, I'm not trying to tell you what to do, but.
Not trying to tell you what to do. That's a good one. It's hard for me to wait sometimes to be asked for advice. I have to be, it's a fine line that I'm treading, and I've really got to be careful, you know, too.
I know what you mean.
I mean, I'm not like super bossy, but and especially now with the pandemic and stress levels are high and the world is turned upside down. And it's just a very, very different, you know, time in our lives right now.
Oh, for sure.
I hope that you have enjoyed episode 83, an interview with Victoria Coberly. And tomorrow will be part 2, an interview with Victoria Coberly, where we get into dealing with the pandemic, her career path, writing, and brokenness. I want to thank all of you for being faithful listeners, and I want to get a shout out to Timothy Horton
for bringing our intro and outro music every week, which is entitled Valley of Grace. And you can find that out on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and Amazon. And then when you get a chance, if you are being blessed by Healing Our Brokenness podcast, if you can give a shout out to your friends and let them know we are on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Stitcher, iTunes, and YouTube. Until next time.
So much.
So much.